Mayor Aftab Purival must be a member of the Yang Gang. Is that reference dated? Have we put the 2020 election behind us? Cincinnati's mayor is taking a leaf from Andrew Yang's book and proposing a version of universal basic income for the Queen City. Also in the news, you shall not pass this Tolkien-inspired brewery in Erlanger without stopping in for a beer. This is Above the Fold. Welcome to Above the Fold, the podcast by the Cincinnati Business Courier. I'm your host, Andy Brownfield, joined by co-host Tom Demaropoulos. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Andy. That was a fantastic Gandalf the Grey.
I'm going to confess, I watched that clip six times before we recorded this just to make sure I could get it right. So you're a big Lord of the Rings fan, aren't you?
I am. I have read the trilogy multiple times, even though it's really just one book. I've read it multiple times.
So I read The Hobbit only recently, and I had a tough time of it. I'm not sure if it was the language or what, but it was difficult for me to make it through. I mean, what am I missing? Is the trilogy itself a must-read?
I don't, you know, that's a great question, Andy. It's been different every time I've read it. So the first time I read it was in high school, and reading it in high school, you know, I just kind of devoured the book and all the mythology and the background and this incredible world that Tolkien had built. And then I read this, I can't pronounce it, the Silmarillion, the textbook of it as well. But then reading it again, you know, after high school, it's a great story.
I'll have to give it another shot. I mean, it seems so seminal in the genre of fantasy, and I'm a huge fantasy fan. I need to get over myself. So as I had mentioned, Mayor Aftab, he proposed three new pilot social programs as part of the city's budget, and they are things that have been tested before in the cities like Chicago, Pittsburgh, and New Orleans. So as part of this new budget, and again, it's just a proposed budget, still got to be approved and passed by city council, but Aftab, he put aside $1.5 million to reduce or wipe out medical debt for 30,000 residents of Cincinnati.
Yeah, this would be huge for a portion of our residents. We have to see if it gets through to through city council.
Yeah, so you know, this has been tried in other communities where governments have bought medical debt from collectors who usually they've already reduced the size of the debt just in hopes of getting at least something back from debtors. I mean, debt collectors, they'll buy debt from issuers like banks or hospitals for pennies on the dollar in hopes that they'll be able to make a return on that investment by wringing a portion of what's due out of borrowers. Because, I mean, if you buy $1 million of debt for 20 cents on the dollar and you're able to recoup 40% of that, 50% of that, you're still profiting. So Mayor Aftab, he wants to wipe out medical debt for 30,000 residents of Cincinnati through this program. And that's not it. He's also planning on putting aside $250,000 to pilot a universal basic income program, which would leverage another $1.75 million in private funding and provide 100 Cincinnatians with just a measure of income meant to meet their basic needs for the year and supplement other sources of income. In the hopes that the program would eventually save money by eliminating the need for other social welfare programs.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about a kind of a universal income or a basic income level for residents, but this is a bold move, I think, for Cincinnati especially. I think in other cities it's not as it wouldn't be viewed as bold, but here this seems a little outside the box.
Yeah, Cincinnati doesn't exactly have the reputation for being a pretty progressive city. Now, as I had mentioned up top, Andrew Yang, former presidential candidate and businessman, he had proposed something like this when he was running for president in 2020. I think it would have added something staggering like $1 trillion to the national debt, but his argument was that it would also save a lot of money by pulling people off welfare and EBT and other social programs that already consume a lot of our budget.
Yeah, so it would be more just a shifting of those dollars and as opposed to actually adding cost.
Yeah. So a third program that Mayor Aftab proposed was $375,000 to give every child in the Preschool Promise program $50 in hopes that their parents would add to it and kind of seed a savings account that would follow them as they develop.
yeah, this is another move that I think is well-intentioned, and I hope that it results in the results that they're going for. I don't know, Andy, are you one who can you save with the idea that you'll get something more in the future, or if you have something right now, would you rather use it right now?
I am, much like Smaug, the dragon from the Hobbit book, a hoarder. I hoard my resources, and then I don't know if it was growing up with two brothers or what, but maybe I call it Catholic guilt. I'm just so loath to spend my money on anything.
I'm the same way. So if I did the marshmallow test, you know, say you can have one marshmallow now, or if you wait 15 minutes, you can have two marshmallows. As a kid, I would have waited for an hour and a half to get four marshmallows.
Hey, I mean, that's a good way to go through life. It's a very safe way. In the what is it, the story of the grasshopper and the ant, I was definitely the actually, socially I'm the grasshopper, fiscally I'm the ant. All right, so it's been a long time coming, but the political corruption saga that plagued city council a number of years back seems to finally be coming to somewhat of an end. So, you know, to jog people's memories, not that it was all too long ago, the FBI was really looking to crack down on public corruption, and two undercover agents posing as out-of-town real estate developers kind of got a couple of our local politicians, you know, wrapped up in a scheme for alleged bribes for support of different projects in town. Well, one project in particular. And Tamaya Denard, former city councilwoman's, already pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 18 months in prison. P.G. Sittenfeld was found guilty at a jury trial of two of his counts and is still yet to be sentenced. And just last week, Jeff Pastor, another former city councilman, he agreed to accept a plea, and that could see him facing up to 2 years in prison.
Yeah, Andy, it's kind of hard to believe that this was starting in 2020. It's been almost 3 years since these arrests were made and information started coming out about what the FBI had been working on here in Cincinnati.
And also, just through the course of the P.G. Sittenfeld trial, it seemed like the FBI was really digging in and looking deeper than these three, but a number of things happened, and they were, these FBI agents eventually found out to be undercover feds, and that kind of halted the investigations. Who knows how deep it could have gone? So Pastor, it's part of his plea agreement. He has agreed to give up $15,000 that he forfeited when he was arrested in 2020. So he was allegedly took $55,000 in bribes, and this makes it seem like $15,000 of that was left. And as part of this, since he's not been found guilty of a crime and said he's pleading guilty, that's a necessary step for the government to recoup the money that it put into this case. And an associate of his, Tyron Marshall, they were both indicted on 10 felony counts. He has yet to accept a plea agreement like Pastor or go to trial. All right, so as I gleefully stated up front, yes, there is a new brewery in Cincinnati called the Fabled Brew Works, and it's a fantasy-themed brewery that takes its inspirations from works like Tolkien's Lord of the Rings and in Dungeons & Dragons. And it opened on June 1st, and the really neat thing about this is it's kind of like walking into a fantasy world. I mean, there's a little village setting that kind of hides the restrooms. There are clouds painted onto the ceilings. There's trees and shrubberies. And it's like being transported into a different world. And I wonder how much of this is just the need for craft breweries these days with a proliferation of them to really differentiate themselves in the user experience.
Andy, I think you hit on the key thing here, which is differentiation. Because at this point, you know, there are so many breweries that make a good IPA. There are so many breweries that have a good sour beer. There are so many breweries that have a good kind of whatever their key beer is. But people in all aspects of life, I think, are looking for experiences, and that's what Fabled looks like. It's an experience. You're going there because it is different than your typical brewery, which, you know, normally has kind of the warehouse vibe or a big open space in an industrial type of building. And this is totally different than that.
Yeah, so I was talking to Jason Brewer a while ago. He is opening up his own brewery, Wandering Monsters, up on the east side in Anderson Township, and he's going to have a duck pin bowling element to that as well, because he, you know, to back up a bit, he was the longtime general manager of Listerman, one of our oldest craft breweries. And he said that he's seen the industry change to the point where it's not just enough to have a great IPA. It used to be that beer nerds would flock from all corners of the city or even all corners of the region to try out the latest and greatest from Rheingeist or from Darkness or from Brink or from Brink Brewing. But now it's just everybody's got great beer. I mean, you can't survive as a craft brewer in Cincinnati without it, so you got to give people a reason beside that to come visit you. All right, so on the cover recently, we had a really great story from Chris Wetterick looking into just how Cincinnati landed this nonstop flight from CVG to London. And it turns out it seems like a pretty competitive process.
Yes, and what I love about this story is kind of the idea of how CVG closed this transaction, this idea that Candice McGraw and her team from CVG were meeting with British Airways, and they had a satellite photo of Cincinnati at night, which when you look at it initially, it's, you know, black and white image. But what you can see is this, you know, huge lit up area where Cincinnati and North Kentucky are. And then just north of it, almost touching it now, was Dayton. And that was the kind of the shining light that Candice McGraw used to show that, you know, you want to go where the light is. You don't want to go, you know, to the darkness. Look at all these people that you're going to be able to catch that will want to travel from this region. And when you do, when you combine our MSA with Dayton's, we are the 18th largest. We would be the 18th largest in the country. It's millions of people.
Yeah, and so British Airways hasn't told Cincinnati who we were competing with for that flight, but you have to imagine it's going to include other regional powerhouse cities. Powerhouse might be a stretch. Other regional cities like Indianapolis or Louisville. But Cincinnati had that kind of differentiation in that it could draw people from an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours away who'd be willing to travel to get a nonstop flight, which is an incredible rarity flying from CVG internationally to London. And just from there, I mean, London's a jumping off point to really just anywhere else in Europe and a much shorter flight.
Yeah, and it can't, I don't think it can be understated what a win this is for CVG and for the region to have this type of flight, direct flight on a regular basis. I think I'd be planning a trip to London if I could.
So on the flip side of this coin is tourism from the UK and from Europe to the Cincinnati region. And it looks like the return flights from London to CVG are actually quite full. So what do you think the pitch was there for coming on from London, one of the cultural capitals of the world, to Cincinnati, Ohio?
So, yeah, I would imagine that Cincinnati has a lot, you know, going for it. This is a city that I think is highly representative of America. So you get a good sense for what America is. You can go see a baseball game with the oldest Major League Baseball team.
Oh yeah.
You can, you know, head over to Northern Kentucky where you can catch a horse race or jump on the Bourbon Trail. Two very, you know, quintessential Kentucky activities. I think there's a lot that you can get to from CVG using that as your starting point if you really want to see what America's like.
Yeah, and we're the entree to the Bourbon Trail, and I'm so curious knowing just how big Scotch is worldwide, but especially the UK being the birthplace and the only place you can legally manufacture Scotch, what they would think of bourbon. So the tourism industry of Cincinnati has already launched an aggressive digital marketing campaign in London, Scotland, France, and Germany, and they feature things like Union Terminal, Bourbon, Great American Ballpark, all the various concerts and music that you can catch around Cincinnati, FC Cincinnati, horse racing, and food. And if you think about it, I know, you know, you can jokingly say that Skyline Chili is the regional representative cuisine of Cincinnati, but I mean, as we record this, the James Beard Awards will be announced as this episode drops, and we've got quite a few restaurants that were given nods in those awards, the Oscars of the food industry, so nothing to shake a stick at.
Yeah, we're no slouches anymore.
All right, so a new $150 million nature-infused community on, well, your neck of the woods has just broken ground.
Yes, I used to be a resident of Green Township for a number of years. Now I'm out in Whitewater Township, a little bit farther west.
So as a lifelong Eastsider, it pains me to cede any ground, but is the west side the best side?
Well, of course it is, but you know, in this case, we're talking about a project that is really different from anything that's been developed on the west side. So, you know, in the past, there have been golf course communities. There have been, you know, residential developments that are built around kind of mixed-use centers. But what's being planned in Green Township, this project called Trailside Village, is really more of a development that is focused on nature. That's going to be kind of the centerpiece of this project. Is about 55 acres of land that will not be touched as they're building homes in the area, which is, you know, very different than what you see with traditional residential single-family home developments. Typically, you kind of clear all the lots and start building new homes and plant new trees. The developers here are taking a very different approach.
The thing that I think is really cool about it and like a lot is that almost every single home, and there are 191 single-family homes here, has a front porch, and they all face out either looking onto some kind of green space or abutting some kind of green space. So while the developers here could have really, you know, squeezed every inch out of this property and put as many units as possible to make as much money as possible, they really focus on what are people going to want from this? What's going to make this an attractive place to live? And to a lot of people, it is green space. It seems like kind of the pendulum is shifting, where for the last decade or so, we saw a lot of people kind of coming into downtown, into urban spaces like over the Rhine. But now it seems like access to the outdoors and green spaces is becoming much more popular.
Yeah, Andy, I would agree with that, that there's this return to nature. I think that people realize, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at screens, looking at phones, and there's a whole world out there that's beneficial to spend time in. And this development is going to have that kind of right outside your doorstep. That's the kind of the appeal, the pitch here, is that for some of these homes, they'll be on a bike and walk trail that is going to be extended by nearly 2 miles in length. So they're going to have a lot more space to go out there. Plans for outdoor playground areas. And then you'll be able to go and play kind of in the, you know, as kids used to do, you'll be able to play in the woods.
Yes, so this story was written by our intern, Luke Bassessi, who did a fantastic job on it, and is a listener of the podcast. Thank you, Luke. And he had a really great figure in here that the average American child spends between 4 and 7 minutes playing outside compared to 7 hours a day looking at their screens. So that's, it kind of speaks to what you're saying. This is going to offer families, especially, kind of a...
As a parent of, you know, of younger children, that's a scary stat to look at, and something that I hope, you know, as a parent, I work to avoid screen burnout for them at such an early age.
Yeah, I've got a good buddy who, when he and his wife were starting their family, said, "Yeah, I'm never going to let my kids look at the phone or at an iPad." And I don't think that's I don't think you can avoid those things these days. But still, it's great to have. I remember summers spent chasing around my friends in the neighborhood with super soakers, and I kind of miss that.
Yep.
So this week on the podcast, we've got Tony Manafo, the CEO and co-founder of ProLink, one of the fastest-growing companies in Cincinnati, and in fact, an award winner in our Fast 55 program. So Fast 55 honors the 55 fastest-growing companies in the region, but we also break that down into revenue categories, and ProLink was the winner in the fastest growing company in the largest revenue, $100 million plus category in Cincinnati. So Tony talks with us about how he founded the company. company, and how the legacy created by his father, who was given 1 year to live after a cancer diagnosis, but spent the next decade impacting the lives of his community, so much so that a 3.5-hour line formed to view his casket during his funeral, inspired him to start a company that would help other people create legacies of their own. This is Tony Manafo on Above the Fold.
This is awesome. And I was telling him, Andy, I had to go look at some condos. One's on the 4th floor. Another one came up on the 10th floor. And it has an outdoor balcony. Both of them did. And it's from Peter Fry. And I'm like, all right, 4th floor, I can handle the balcony. The 10th floor heights start getting in with me. Here I'm good because there's windows and everything like that, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the elevator ride gets me. I got to focus on something, or else it's just shooting up 34 floors. It's too fast.
Yeah. I was in Charleston a few weeks ago. Your friends of mine asked, they're like, hey, do you want to meet us at the rooftop at the Dewberry? And I was like, yeah, sure. My wife went and met some girlfriends for lunch. I walk out on this rooftop, and the top of this steeple is like right next to the rooftop. And all of a sudden, I could just feel my heart, and I'm like, am I able to do this? I sit down, my buddy and his wife are like, you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. They're like, what's wrong? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just slightly uncomfortable. I'm like, just give me a minute to let me settle in, you know? Yeah.
Well, this was before my time, but we used to have an office in Carew Tower, I think on the 50-something floor. And
whatever the top one was.
And as legend has it, you could feel the building sway in the wind. And at that point, I'd be working from home.
Yeah.
Full time.
I had a friend of mine work at for First Financial for years, and I don't know what floor he was on. But he said, you know, they had the window washers were out there one day, and he goes, one day they came in, and there was a window that opened in his office, and they were crawling out onto the... He's like, I go, what'd you do? He goes, I literally got up and walked out of my office. He goes, I couldn't watch this guy. He's like, it was so uncomfortable.
That would be terrible.
Yeah.
Well, we've had some meetings in our publisher's office next door, and he overlooks like the PNC building, and there have been workers working on that sign, and like I can't watch it. I just get this guy's gonna fall down to his death right now.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they have backstops and cables and hooks and carabiners, but
and they don't even think about it.
No. Not a concern in the world.
No. I mean, I couldn't even step foot out there. We had, my wife and I did this quadrathon in Quebec, and it was you ran, you biked, you climbed up these stairs, like, I don't know, 1,000 feet or something like that, and then you took a zip line across this waterfall that was like 300-something feet to the other side. And so we get up to the top. Everybody's in line, you know, waiting. I notice there's a bridge over the waterfall. I look at my wife and I said, you know what? I'm just going to take the bridge over the waterfall. I'll meet you on the other side. So she's like, are you kidding? I go, no.
No.
I said, I'm okay. So, and then I get to the other side and I said to this, I saw this other guy wearing the same Quattrathon t-shirt. I said, you afraid of heights, dude? And he goes, no, man. They told me there was a weight limit. He's like, I wasn't allowed on it. He's like, I'm like, got it. He goes, heights? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, do you mind pulling the mic a little bit closer? Or you can just...
Yeah, whatever you guys want me to do.
Whatever works best for you.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, my wife and I, we honeymooned in Italy, and we tried to go hiking in the mornings. And... there's one, like you mentioned, going thousands of feet upstairs. Like I thought, like, oh yeah, hiking upstairs would be a lot easier than hiking like up a hill or a mountain. No, it sucks.
Yeah, it is. When I was doing it, Chris Ciccinelli was in front of me, and the only reason why I was able to make it, I just looked at the back of his shoes the entire way. So literally, I'm just like, all right, I'm focusing on Chris. At one point, Chris stopped halfway up the stairs to take a picture of the waterfall. He's like, are you okay? I was like, I'm just waiting for you to keep moving forward. And I said, I'm not even going to turn around and look right now. We just got to keep going.
Sometimes you just got to power through.
That's right. That's right. So.
Yeah. All right. So I know we're talking to you, and this won't publish until afterwards, but on the eve of our, you know, Fast 55 awards being announced.
And yep.
Yeah. I'm wondering how, especially given the global pandemic that just happened. How have you managed that growth?
You know, I'm a person that believes in people, process, and systems. And I certainly think revenue and growth thrives off of infrastructure. But for us, it's really been about the people. And ever since, really going back to our beginning, it's funny, I was just talking to Jacqueline Maxwell, our Vice President of Corporate Controller, and it was a lesson she taught me. So when we first started, we were about 5 months in, and Mike and I were selling, we're recruiting, we're doing the accounting and finance, which we probably had no business doing the accounting and finance whatsoever. But as a startup, you got to do what you can do to survive. And at the time, we really bootstrapped it to start ProLink. And so, you know, for every individual that we hired, especially if they weren't in a producing-based role, it was a cost center. So we chose to do our own accounting finance. So we're sitting there 1 week, and week over week, we were 10,000 ahead of where we were the previous week from a net income standpoint. And, you know, I looked at Mike and I told my brother, and he said, well, that's great. And I said, no, I said, it doesn't make sense. We paid the same amount of people. We pay the same amount of hours. I'm entering something wrong in the ledger. So I backed it out. I re-entered it in. And the same thing happened again where we were $10,000 positive. He goes, it has to be right. I go, it's not right. I said, it just doesn't make sense. So I call our CPA. And I said, you know, hey, Kevin, here's the deal. I'm doing the accounting. It's not adding up. I could use some help. So he introduces me to Jacqueline. Jacqueline comes in on a Saturday. And we probably met there at 9, probably around 1 o'clock. You know, she looks at me and says, here's the deal. You need to stick to what you're good at. And she's let me come in and start handling all your accounting finance. Why don't you handle all the front end in terms of operations, recruiting, sales? And I look at that single thing, because for a lot of startups or founder-led organizations, as I read articles or magazines, a lot of times founders, you know, kind of choke the growth, so to speak, you know, because they want to be in control of everything. And essentially, Jacqueline fired me that day. She fired me from the accounting department. And so ever since that day, and that was 12 years ago, I still look at, you know, what are we doing today that we need to keep doing? What are we doing today that we should stop doing? What are we not doing altogether that we need to start doing? And then what am I good at and what am I not good at? And then as an organization, what are we good at? What are we not good at? And who do we need to bring in to help us with that? And so for us, it was about looking around and saying, okay, how do we bring in the right people that have a common vision of what ProLink does, where we can lock arms together and move forward?
So Tony, what for you is the secret sauce to find those people? What is it? Is there something you look for? Is there a common thread, or is it different for different roles?
Well, that's a great question. For me, I really look at individuals who, they want to create their own legacy. They want more in life. They want to create the best versions of themselves. And the whole vision of ProLink is to be your vehicle to get where you want to go personally, professionally, and financially, all while creating your own legacy. And so every single person is their own unique individual. And I want to get to know them. I want to understand who they are, how they think, how do they want to use ProLink as their vehicle to get where they want to go personally and professionally and financially? And what does their own legacy really look like? And so they have to have that internal hunger, that internal drive for more. The other thing I look for is what adversity have they overcome in their life? Hmm. I think everybody has a story, and I think it's important to understand the individual story. One of our core values is linked by empathy. And so for me, it's really important that every single person inside ProLink and the ProLink family has their voice and their voice is heard.
So this legacy and the idea of legacy, why is that an important thing to you?
So for me, You know, it really, it happened, you know, my father passed away when I was young. You know, he got cancer when he was 29 years old, given less than a year to live. And he sat us all down in our den and said, here's the deal. I have cancer. I've been given less than a year to live, and I promise I won't give up until they close the lid on my coffin. Now, you know, fortunately, he ended up living 10 years. And during that 10 years, he taught us drive. He taught us work ethic. He taught us perseverance. You get one life. You get one opportunity. It's up to you to maximize that. Now, his idea, you know, was, hey, when we beat cancer, you know, you, me, and Mike are going to start our own business. And his idea of business was buying a Subway franchise. There was a Popsicle franchise. So, you know, being a little kid, it was neat to have this vision of, hey, we're going to start our own business together at some point. Now, fast forward, my dad passed away my first day of high school, freshman year. And I remember being at his visitation. And there was a 3.5-hour line to get up to the casket. And people would come up to me and say, you know, your dad helped me pay my credit card off. Your dad helped me save money to send my kid to school. Your dad helped me buy a car. You know, and during that time, I was 14, so I was just processing like, okay, you know, that's great. But as I kind of moved forward and, you know, became older and mature, I looked back to that point. And that was really the first time that legacy really kind of jumps out at me. It wasn't that he was paying their credit card off or giving them money for school or buying them a car, because we didn't have that. You know, we were really lower middle class. Like, I think our eyeballs barely popped over the middle class line, you know. But it was about him teaching people how to do that and how to save. And so for me, as I've kind of went to college and then started my career, and when I got into my career, it was all about, I just want to be number one. I want to be number one. And I was really driven around it. And then suddenly I had this epiphany when we were putting the plan together for ProLink, was we want to create something that's bigger than any one person. We want to create something that's a living, breathing thing that you have to tend to mind, body, and spirit. And how do we give individuals, the ProLink family, our clients, our talent, our team, the tools and resources that they need to create their own legacy? Because I think in life, so many people spend so much time trying to be something they're not or trying to be somebody else. And so the faster I think we can get individuals to look in the mirror and say, I am who I am. And that's a Peter Tosh song, by the way. you know, how do I invest into myself? And for me, what happened really was I graduated college. I was around 26 years old. And suddenly it was like, wow, nobody cares more about my development than me. And I never really thought about it like that. You know, growing up playing sports and having teachers push you and challenge you, suddenly you're in the real world. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. It's on me. You know, whether I succeed or whether I fail, I have a choice. And the second that choice really came alive to me, suddenly I felt like the purpose I had was, how do I clear the fog or help clear the fog of other people to where they realize they have a choice? And whatever their legacy is for them, wherever they want to go in their life, that is up to them. That is their individual choice. All I want to do is help them with tools and resources to get there. And I want it bad for them. Now, if I want it more for them than they want it for themselves, that's a dangerous combo. Mm-hmm. And I tell them that. I'm like, I want it really, really bad for you. I want you to be great. I want you to run ProLink someday. But I can't want it more for you than when you want it for yourself. Yep. And then do you understand what that is? Do you understand where you want to go short-term, mid-term, long-term, personally, professionally, financially? Because I think so many people wake up every day and they say, okay, I'm going to work as hard as I can today. But for what? And then they wake up the next day and they do it over again.
Yeah.
And they do it over again. So it's like, what is really their individual purpose? And I think that all stems back to, you know, my father, you know, one life, one opportunity. You know, what is your mission in life? And that's really, for me, where legacy kind of comes altogether. Pretty simple.
Yeah.
So what made the staffing industry the right vehicle for you to do that?
You know, so growing up, when my father, when he got diagnosed with cancer, you know, he was in and out of hospitals, you know, getting chemotherapy, getting radiation. He had surgery. For the last 2.5 years of his life, we had a nurse, a hospice nurse, that was with us. My mom worked full time, and hospice is end of life care. And so when her name's Winky, when Winky came in, you know, she was told she would be there less than 2 weeks. And so she ended up being with our family for 2.5 years. And so we saw the impact that Winky had on our lives as a clinician helping take care of my father. But really, she ended up becoming a family member to us. And so, and we still see her to this day. And matter of fact, after my dad passed away, she retired. And so when we looked at staffing, you know, Mike and I did a lot of research. Out of college, I started in the staffing industry, so did Michael. And we worked for the same company. And we were passionate about staffing. We were passionate about helping people find opportunities, helping people find better opportunities to help better their lives, to help better their families' lives. And so when Mike and I decided that we were going to start ProLink, we started doing a lot of research in the industry. And we looked at really two main industries as we were, you know, going down the path of starting. And one was IT and one was healthcare. And in healthcare, we just felt called to. And I think that all stemmed around our father. And so then as we studied more about the healthcare industry, we started realizing that it was one of the fastest growing segments inside the staffing industry. We also felt like it was about 10 years behind where it needed to be from a process standpoint, from a system standpoint, from a technology standpoint. And so we felt like we could really take a results-driven approach and apply it to healthcare staffing and make impact very quickly. And so the first few years, a lot of our competitors would call us and tell us that we were disrupting the industry in a bad way. You know, because our whole goal is, you know, if a clinician loves working at TriHealth, we want to make that marriage work. Whereas a lot of our competitors would say, oh, no, you can't convert that individual. They need to stay on our books. It's not about that for us. You know, for ProLink, it's not about being the biggest. It never has, and it never will. It's about being the best, and it's about being the best for our clients, for our talent, for our internal team, and for all the communities that we live and serve in throughout the country. If that takes us to be number one in the industry, great. But I will tell you this, we're never going to stand on stage and say we're number one. That's just not who we are. We're going to be humble about it, and we're going to continue to move forward. We view the world that it's always slightly broken. And so it's like, how do we constantly fix it? How do we constantly strive for perfection? And that's what continues to keep us motivated. And also, we look at, okay, you know, how do we make ProLink the best organization we can be? How do we make sure that we provide our talent the best community that they need and deserve? And then our internal team as well. How do we make sure that we provide them all the tools and resources that they need to be effective at their job? And it's not just about overly being effective. It's about being efficient and giving people time back. And I think it's about giving people time back to either do what they do well at work or giving them time back personally so they can spend more time with their family, their friends, and their loved ones.
Tony, have you seen that become more of a something that people are looking for kind of post-pandemic, that people want time?
Yes. I think, you know, when I think about the pandemic, there's lessons there. And I think, you know, a lot of people probably got caught up in the rat race of life and unnecessary meetings or unnecessary happy hours or dinners. that maybe didn't necessarily matter. And I'm not saying creating relationships doesn't matter, but I think people got themselves busy doing things that maybe didn't matter in totality. And so I think what they're looking for is authentic relationships. You know, people that truly, truly care. And it's a two-way street. You know, as much as I'm sharing with you, I want you to share with me. Mm-hmm. And I get vulnerability is a big thing. And as the leader of ProLink, I think one of my number one responsibilities is to show vulnerability to our team. And I can get up and talk about vulnerability all day long, but if I'm not vulnerable, what does that really mean? Mm-hmm. And I think vulnerability comes in different degrees for each individual. There are certain people that we all know who are the oversharer, meaning they are so comfortable, you know, being super vulnerable. But then the next person, and I've been in meetings where this, where the next person shares something, and I know there's more there. I know you could go deeper. And we walk out of the room, and this just happened not long ago, and he looked at me and goes, "That's the most vulnerable I've ever been in my life." Hmm. And in being somebody who's a vulnerable person, I felt like, you know, he had just scratched the surface, but it teaches you not to judge, because that was a big step for that individual. And so it's like, okay, how do we keep moving him forward to where he realizes everybody's on his side?
Yeah.
You know, and when he falls, we're going to pick him up. And when he wins, we're going to celebrate him.
So what's it like working with your brother? Because I've got two younger brothers who I love to death, but I don't think they'd enjoy working with me. I'm a little bossy.
Yeah. You know, fortunately for Mike and I, you know, there's five kids total in our family, the older sister, myself, Mike, and then we have two younger brothers. And Mike and I got to work together prior to starting ProLink. So we worked together for about 7.5 years. And it was really our blank canvas to make sure that we could coexist. And the nice part with Mike is our strengths are really opposite of each other. We're kind of the yin and yang to each other. And so I love operations. I love the puzzle of it. I love the complexity of it. My brother is our chief growth officer, so he's looking at acquisitions. He's looking at new verticals. He's helping manage some of our largest relationships that we have throughout the country and internationally. And he loves that. And so, you know, really when you combine us together, it's kind of the perfect skill set. And so even when we were early on, I remember we were sitting down in the office we started in, and I was stressed out. And, you know, I'm a thinker. So, like, I will start obsessing and get very analytical about something. And Mike looks at me, he's like, "What are you stressed about?" And I walk him through what I'm stressed about. He goes, "Why are you so worried about that? Let's get out of here. You know, we'll figure it out." You know, and you need that. You know, you kind of need that in your life, the person who's going to kind of grab you and pull you up and say, "Hey, let's head home. Tomorrow we'll come back in, fresh set of lenses, and we'll figure it out." You know, Mike and I have a pretty special relationship. He's 2.5 years younger than me, but, you know, going through, you know, our father having cancer for 10 years, living out this dream together with our father, wanting to start our own business. In a way, when we started ProLink, we felt like we were carrying out our father's legacy. We felt like we were carrying out his dream. And Mike and I really quickly learned, I would say, inside of 2 years, that ProLink wasn't just about our father's legacy. ProLink, my father has a piece of his legacy in ProLink. But ProLink became then about everybody's legacy. And I feel fortunate, and I know Mike feels fortunate, just to be a part of the journey. And that's what it's about. And the legacy of ProLink will live on. You know, someday when Mike and I retire, which will probably be like in our 90s, you know, that legacy will continue. And ProLink is a workforce solutions. We've evolved from, you know, it was first about healthcare staffing, and then you evolve, and now it's more about workforce solutions. Yes, we do staffing. We do direct placements. We do RPO. We do predictive analytics. We do technology with VMS systems and talent apps. We also do consulting. It is evolved. We have an international division now. It's more than just one thing, and it's more than just one person. And that, to me, is what's special about it. But, you know, going back to, you know, working with your brother, I'm excited and happy to share this journey with him. You know, that doesn't mean it was always sunshine and rainbows. But, you know, for Mike and I, we communicate really effectively with each other. You know, so if he has a thought, he has an idea, I have a thought or an idea, we communicate it. You know, we do a really good job of, when we're at family functions, we won't talk about business, just out of respect for the rest of our family members. Our kids, he has three boys, I have two boys, are super close. Neither one of us want our kids in the business. We want them to live their own lives. And that's something that Mike and I agreed upon as we were putting the plans together, because there's somebody internally that probably would be better to run ProLink, you know, than one of our kids, because they grew up in the business. And I think it's important that everybody at ProLink has that opportunity for wherever they want to go, you know, whether they want to be the chief growth officer, whether they want to be the CEO someday, they have that opportunity. Yeah. And I don't view ProLink as a family business. Mike and I know Mike doesn't either. We view it more as a business family.
Excellent. Tony, thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
Above the Fold is a podcast by the Cincinnati Business Courier, hosted by me, Andy Brownfield, and Tom Demaropoulos. The podcast is produced and edited by me, and our theme music was written by Dylan McCartney. Come back next week for another edition of Above the Fold.